The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
I've an in for Pat. Now, if you know someone who is knee deep in conspiracy theories, maybe it's a friend or a family member or a neighbour, and if it's all they can talk about, how do you engage with them? Well, it's a great pleasure to welcome back regular on the PK show, David Robert Grimes, author and disinformation expert, is here to help with this. How are you, David?
Ivan, I'm good. How are
you're
doing?
You're looking very summery.
I know. Wearing shorts and not the suit jacket like yourself. I know, you're better dressed than me.
The dress code has gone to pot here.
I know. Once Pat's out, it all goes downhill.
Indeed. You can't get standards anymore. So, first of all, dealing with the consequences of those affected by misinformation. So what you're saying is that these people are genuinely believing of what they're being told?
So this is a consequence of the ubiquity of misinformation online, that people fall victim to it. A lot of us saw during the pandemic, we had family WhatsApp groups, and suddenly you'd find out, say, a cousin or maybe a brother or a sister had some very strange beliefs about, say, vaccines or masks or whatever else, because they were being exposed to this misinformation. And that can create a lot of tension in families. So it's probably the most common question I get asked. I get a message going, my husband or my friend is really believing this thing and it's affecting our relationship. And then I'm asked, how can you bring people back to the side of evidence and reason? And it's not a straightforward case. A lot of people think they can argue people out of this. You genuinely can't. What's really, really important in these situations is to understand why people got to where they are. So I think the most important question you can ask people is, that's really interesting. Where did you hear that and why do you believe it? So you give the person an opportunity to have a discussion rather than a debate. That's a really important thing. It is so tempting to go, that's just wrong. It's absolute nonsense. I've done it myself. I do it quite a bit. But if you're worried about the person, understanding why they were susceptible to this misinformation in the first place is really important. Because there's a fundamental problem with human psychology in so much as we tend to emote before we reflect. So if we come across information that makes us feel angry or sad or scared, we weigh that much heavier. So oftentimes just understanding where someone got to and going, okay, that's interesting. And then having a discussion based on that rather than a debate is a really good opening technique.
Mm. And I'm old enough now to kind of live and let live, that I'm kind of very open. Like if you feel this way about whatever, about who killed JFK or about whatever, it actually doesn't upset me, but I notice with some people, they're a bit tyrannical about it. It really upsets them.
Well, there's two kind of frameworks that we work in the modern era, which is a bit of a problem. We have social media, which is very performative, right? If someone says something wrong on social media and I see wrong things every day and they get sent to me, I often choose not to react because I'm like, look, that person is just wrong and there's no benefit. You have to choose your battles. This is more of a problem, say, if you're in a relationship or a friendship or some kind of connection with a person where their beliefs might be causing them harm. For example, I've seen a lot of couples, one of whom has fallen down the anti-vaccine conspiracy hole and doesn't want to get their children vaccinated and the other one does. This is a real tension. That's a real problem. That's a health risk to the children. That's a situation where you have to pick your battles. And I would say things like social media are performative. Arguing with people online is generally pointless unless you're choosing your audience very carefully. What's far more productive is having discussions with people that matter. And again, you're right. So you can live and let live to a certain extent until it starts having severe consequences on a connection of some description.
Well, speaking of connection, what about WhatsApp groups?
Oh, WhatsApp groups, I mean, they were eye-opening. I'll give you an example. Back in 2016, I was on BBC and I had a paper on conspiracy theories. And I remember the hosts laughing, saying, oh, you know, these are people with tinfoil hats who live in their mother's basement. And I said, actually, about 25% of the population are susceptible to what's called conspiratorial ideation. And then during the pandemic, I had a lot of journalists texting me going, it turns out my family are full of conspiracy theorists, right, because of WhatsApp groups. But partly this is patterns of exposure, right? When people are afraid, why do we fall victim to conspiracy theory? We're looking for explanations of the world around us. We're looking for a thing called epistemic certainty. And conspiracy theories give a hollow illusion of that. They offer you a simple explanation for a complicated event. And it's really alluring. And you have to realize why people are vulnerable. Often the people who say this stuff the loudest are quite scared and trying to understand their fears and say, look, I totally understand why you're worried about this. I'm just going to give you an alternative that I think might be better and just sit with that for a while. Because as I say, I've said in my book and I've said on here, you never change anyone else's mind. You give people the tools to change their own mind. You sow seeds and let them do it.
In terms of the perpetrators of disinformation, what do you think is their genuine motive?
Well, that's a really...
Do they actually believe it or not?
Actually, this is really interesting. And you make a really fine distinction. Because the people we're talking about right now are people who've fallen victim to misinformation. Mm-hmm. But there are perpetrators of misinformation. A major motivating factor for people that spread a lot of this kind of stuff is narcissism. The people that get huge platforms online spreading contrarian falsehoods, they get the benefit of feeling like they're smart, feeling like they're important, feeling like they matter. For people that have narcissistic traits and maybe not much to back that up, that's really alluring. And the other side is it's financially lucrative as well. If you're spreading disinformation, you can make a lot of money on the side. You can have a Substack, you can have a website. Alex Jones, perhaps the most famous conspiracy theorist that we all can think of, made $65 million a year selling crappy supplements because he had that platform. So there's people that do it for financial reasons. Do they really believe it? Do they believe their own hype? It goes back to how egotistical are they? I think they don't care. I mean, does Donald Trump believe what he says? It's kind of irrelevant when they're harming other people, but it's a really good question.
What about debate? Because I find that when you plug into debates, be it on American politics or whatever, that actually it's become not a debate but a culture war. That people are in their own bubble and, you know, never the twain shall meet.
Full of sound and fury signifying nothing, if we want to go Shakespearean on it. And that's part of the problem with the adversarial framing of most things. Look, you know, debates, we have a kind of semi-classical education hang-up that we think debate is the arbiter of truth. It is not. Like, you don't arrive at a truth. A debate marries you to position and you cannot move. If you and I were in a pub having a discussion, we'd disagree on something, but eventually we'd move towards some kind of consensus. One of us would shift or we'd both shift a bit. Debate doesn't allow you to do that. So it becomes this kind of performative theatre. But
and
really,
some people,
discussion matters.
Like you take someone like Farage, you might disagree with him or you might agree with him, but the point is this, he can have a rhetorical flourish that sounds convincing. Boris was the same.
Excellent.
It's the way you tell him.
And I saw Boris in person when I was back at Oxford once. He was so good at doing this, right? So the problem is debate will reward the best orator. It'll reward the person with the best rhetorical dexterity. It's not going to get you towards the truth. Discussion can get you towards a better understanding of things and therefore closer to a truth. So I always say discussion. And it's really hard to keep your emotions out of that because, again, we're upset by this stuff. So it's just be mindful that other, you know, understanding people are sometimes struggling, even if they're saying the most outlandish, ridiculous things.
So even if you disagree with someone, to be compassionate?
Compassion is...
Understanding?
It's number one thing. Yeah, and it's hard to do because we all get annoyed. Look, I get annoyed. I mean, I said these are perfect, ideal world things. But if a family member has really strange beliefs that are maybe racist, maybe they're homophobic, it's really easy just to get really annoyed. But if you really want to help change their mind or give them the tools to change their mind, you need to understand where they're coming from. And compassion is really important. And also trying to reserve our own distaste for it sometimes is hard to do.
Where does education fit into all of this?
Education is vital because ultimately the reason we fall susceptible to this stuff in the first place is because we have poor media literacy or poor digital literacy. We can't tell the grifters who are misleading us. Now, countries like Finland are starting to realize that this is a fundamental flaw. About half of Europeans don't have good media literacy, right? Even though we're well-educated, rich, we don't have it. Finland have started now training young people in, you know, schools to learn about media literacy, to do active things. And what's really amazing about that is they've gotten really good, but they've also started to trust what we would call mainstream news sources more. They suddenly realize that fact-checking matters, that, you know, properly framing and contextualizing a story matters. So people realizing this will help them better navigate these mazes, and in future we'll have less of this stuff. So ultimately, long-term, education is a solution. But we're far behind in Ireland at the moment.
Is there not another problem here that I find intergenerationally? People take offence and are a lot more sensitive than a previous generation.
Well, part of that's because it's performative. If this stuff is happening on social media, and this is why I say social media, and I keep telling people this, is a theatre. It is people projecting an image of themselves they want or signalling to an in-group or an elite that they want. We know this. So I would say that people get very offended on social media platforms because it's what they're meant to do. It drives engagement. In person, in conversation, I think people are far more open-minded to hearing where you're coming from, even if they disagree. So again, I think the only savior you're going to have is discussions offline. The online stuff is probably kind of pointless.
If finally, of all the disinformation, which is the one that you think is the most important? Is it the anti-vaxxer stuff?
I mean, I'm mostly biased on this because health misinformation is a specialty of mine. I think that's really important. What we're seeing in the US at the moment with Robert F. Kennedy Jr., the legacy of what he does is going to harm thousands and possibly millions of children in the future, right? That is an awful legacy. So I think that's something we need to counteract. But we see it in politics. All of our politics, as you point out, has become this Punch and Judy show where one person yells at another person. We will not get the best solutions for anything unless we learn to drown out the noise and concentrate on the signal.
Okay. Author and disinformation expert and regular on the PK show, Dr. David Robert Grimes, thank you. Now, as you heard on the news, two interesting political developments today. As anticipated, the EU Commission President Ursula von der Leyen safely sailed through the no-confidence motion. And it looks like Mairead McGuinness will be the first candidate in the presidential election into the field, because the only other person who was seeking a nomination for Fine Gael who opened that process on Monday, Sean Kelly, MEP, has stepped down. We had a huge text response earlier to housing, and perhaps we'll come back to that tomorrow on the Friday forum.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.